Alton Brown here for the Alton Brown Cast. I'm joined in the Palatial Studios here at Brain Food Industries by three of my cohorts, not only from the television realm, but also and specifically today we'll be talking about the live show. Those folks are Jim Pace, who's been with me for since he got out of middle school. He never actually went to high school, who among other things is also is my percussionist. Say hi, Jim.
Hey, how you doing?
There you go. Perfect. My longtime prop man and production designer, Todd Bailey, who has been with me since he had hair longer than Jesus.
Hello.
That's it. Man, that's incredibly many words. And the kind of the late comer to the game, my director of digital ops, well, I don't know what else. You do a lot of other stuff in the show too, though. You manage all of the social media stuff that goes into the show, and you also kind of Carol Merrill the game wheels, and you're going to be playing a grandmother now. But that's a whole new thing. Anyway, we're also joined by Sarah Dehier, who's going to be asking, I think, some questions. A kind of running thing. Say hi, Sarah.
Hello.
Wow, everybody's like real wordy until I get a microphone on, then everybody shuts the heck up. I don't know what's up with that. Sarah, you wanted to ask some stuff. Is that how this is going to go?
This is how it's going to go. And I think before we start, it's important to tell fans that aren't in the know, aka are not cool, what the heck is Eat Your Science?
Eat Your Science is a variety show. It is a live touring variety show that is about food. And so it has very large, very unusual, potentially dangerous culinary experiments. It has live comedy. At least I think it's comedy. If people laugh, can you call it comedy, guys? I mean, what do you call those stand-up things? Rants? What are they?
No, I would say that's just a stand-up routine. I mean, it's the monologue. Was it a monologue? I don't know. I don't think it's a monologue because it's not just one thing. It's a set series of
Okay. Comedy.
It's not a tragedy.
It's absolutely not a tragedy. There are puppets. There are taped pieces. There's a lot of audience interaction, which a lot of people are confused about because they think that we have ringers and stuff when we totally don't. And what else? What am I leaving out? I mean, and live music. Me and Jim and our keyboardist Chris do some of our food songs, which of course supports the release of our multi-platinum CD. I say multi-platinum because I'm having one made in platinum. So yeah, triple platinum because I'm having it made in platinum, which I think is pretty awesome.
I'm picking up the CDs in a minivan next week. You know,
well, those three have to.
But they would have fit.
Actually, later this week, I'm going taking my mom's minivan and going picking up the CDs.
Well, except for the three that are being shipped in from Franklin Mint. Those are the platinum ones. You know, Franklin Mint, right? Those are coming from Franklin Mint with certificates of authenticity.
Yeah.
All right. So anyway, that's what Eat Your Science is, and it's a continuation of the massive success that we had with the Edible Inevitable Tour, which was our first live culinary variety show that we played the heck out of. And I still don't actually know how many cities did we actually play?
114. 20 shows, maybe?
Yeah, because of the doubles.
And Eat Your Science played 40 cities in early 2016. We have another 40 cities coming up in spring of 2017. But before you can do that, you're going to be sitting on Broadway for a week during Thanksgiving. How do you feel about that?
I feel fine. I feel great. I feel
convincing.
Well, look, We've played a lot of houses. We've played big houses. We sold out.
We almost sold out the Fox in Detroit.
That's 5,400 seats. Yeah. I want to say. So we almost sold that out. Right?
Austin City Limits.
We sold that out because that was the first show. We're going to be back there in the spring. So we've sold some big houses, but it's not Broadway. And I don't think that I personally am. I mean, the challenges. You know, Todd has to get everything in there, and it's like it's These houses are small.
It's on the small side.
People don't realize how small Broadway houses are. I mean, they're big from a status standpoint, you know, because it's freaking Broadway. And people like us shouldn't probably be allowed on Broadway unless we're seeing a budget, you know, afternoon show of Lion King or something. Matinee, sorry. So, you know, a show like ours technically really shouldn't be on Broadway. But there are a lot of challenges about getting it there. And I mean, you guys haven't seen the theater. I have. It'll fit. The whole theater, whole building would fit in this studio. That's how small it is.
And yet,
I'm still nervous about filling those seats, even though it's like 9,000 seats once you total it all up.
I think before we can get into the challenges, we have to talk about the creative process because, you know.
It's based on panic.
Edible panic Inevitable, and your first tour, you know, you said it was 100 plus cities and you put it to rest. And then you said, we're going
to
do
it. I put it to sleep. I euthanized it.
And instead of changing up the show, say 20, 30%, you said, no, we're going to give fans a brand new show.
Yeah, because I don't know about – I mean, I know that a lot of shows like this will only replace 30 – have you guys ever seen a show where, like, it came back to town and only some of it had been changed down?
I mean, Blue Man Group.
How do you start from scratch when you say
– number one, I think we had to. I mean, there were a lot of people that said, just change out X amount of the show. But then, you know, you go to Tulsa. Okay, let's say you go to Tulsa. We had a really good showing in Tulsa with the Edible Inevitable tour. At least I think we did. And we already took Eat Your Science there, didn't we? Yeah, we did. Mm-hmm. You can't go back there 6 months later and sell people on a new show and show them 70% old material. You've got to. I can't. I feel wrong about that.
You can.
Well, it's not against the law.
It's not. No. Yeah. I mean, people will. How many times have we done meet? We used to do the meet and greets, and there was one time that we were 20
meet
miles.
And greets, by the way, you're talking specifically about the VIP meet and greets.
VIP. Yeah.
Okay. So
special seating or whatever that they.
Jim's talking about the fact that we used to sell VIP tickets to the shows that included access to a meet and greet, where you would come into a special room and we'd be there and we'd hug and have pictures. Pictures made. Well, we wouldn't actually hug, but well, sometimes depends. Grandmother's like,
yeah, sign a picture,
sign a photo, get a photo made. It's a experience.
Stand in front.
We don't do them anymore.
No.
Because I couldn't stay well. It's all these people's like, well, I have this special ticket. I've got bubonic plague, but I'm feeling better. And then, you know, then I get sick, and then you get on the bus, and we all live close together on the bus. It's basically a miniature submarine, and then we're all sick.
Yeah.
Although, Todd, I don't remember you actually ever getting sick.
Todd drinks so much alcohol.
I push my way through it. Just push my way. I don't have time to be sick
the
on tour.
So drunk. They're like, I don't know what to do.
It's like a four shot.
Guys, should we get Todd sick or should we take more beer?
I have such an immune system now with three kids. It takes a lot.
So what we need to do is we need to find out what kind of blood you have, and like I'll get a transfusion exactly. of your blood. I want some Todd serum.
I went out and got Keith Richards' blood from years ago, so I figured I'm really good now. Nothing can hurt me.
Like, by the time this is on, the election will be over, right?
No.
Yes. Yeah, it doesn't matter. I saw a thing on the internet the other day. They said that in all the questions about the election really don't matter. What we should be asking is, what kind of world are we leaving for Keith Richards? Because by all evidence, he will live forever. So basically, you're the Keith Richards of our tour.
That's it. Well, now I'm jinxed.
But now
now that he's sitting in one place,
exactly.
He's going to get sick.
Oh, and with your family, right? Because you're going to have the kids with you in the hotel.
Bring the kids up.
Oh, they're going to probably be sick, and you're going to have like spinal meningitis plus mono or something. Anyway, I'm sorry, Sarah. You asked something about being creative.
Wait, okay. So yeah, going back to this, you start from scratch. You look at Todd and go, this is where we're going with this next show.
No, all Todd cares about is what will fit in the truck.
In the end, it's got to load in and it's got to load out. Yeah,
So talk about that. You have one semi to work with.
Semi. We have one. Yes, we do. We have one tractor trailer, and our deal has always been that we'd never let the show get too big for one trailer, because once you do that, it's a slippery slope.
Then you start adding dancing girls, you have
pretty
backup
soon,
singers.
You're Justin Timberlake. You're Justin Timberlake at that.
You
got 40. You do actually.
You don't?
Yeah, you don't. What are you
don't
doing?
Don't you put roller skates on them and put them in the back of the truck?
You don't. You have to bust. You have to bust dancers.
No. I'm pretty sure you don't have to bust dancers.
No.
I'm pretty
sure.
You can
put them on
truck.
You can
put them in the truck.
Yeah.
Okay. That's
so. So I think our first, the first thing is it is like after we did. When we first started the Edible Inevitable tour, none of us knew what would work
or what wouldn't work.
None of us really didn't know much about theater. We are film people.
Except for that theater degree that I have that means nothing. So we, but we put a show together based on two large demos.
Yes.
And you and I developed, Todd and I, we developed one of them here.
The
Jet Cream. That was completely homegrown.
Yes.
You built that pretty much over in the warehouse.
Yeah, we have a warehouse. That was totally us just fooling around
with fire extinguishers.
With fire extinguishers and trying to blow things up.
But we didn't. How many failures did we have before that thing worked?
We had at least four, I think.
Well, we blew one up.
We blew one up. And the whole thing is we kept wanting to go vertical. And it wasn't until we realized, oh, well, why do we have to go vertical? Can we go horizontal? That it solved all the problems. Then all of a sudden, it was so much easier to vent it. It was so much easier to deal with the pressure coming out of a fire extinguisher.
Yeah, we're talking about a demo, not. Yeah, it doesn't matter. But so we knew what worked in the first show.
That one. Well, and I already also say, too, even with the Easy Bake, I think that's a lot of thing that you've had a constant theme throughout these things, which is looking back to childhood, looking at things that were kind of influential to you, and then what can I do to make that more fun? What can I do that to bring that into, you know, the 2000s kicking and screaming?
Trying to answer, finally, your first question of what's going to be obviously a very long podcast is that we knew everything in the show has to hinge around two large demos. And demos are really difficult in theaters, big ones, because there's something the theaters don't like.
Fire!
Yep,
they hate fire. It. They don't like fire. And so
they don't really want you to cook.
They don't want you to cook. It's kind of like, we really do want a culinary show. Well, what do you want me to cook? Oh, no, there's no cooking. Ideally, every theater that wants a culinary show would really just like you to make a salad. Toss salads be very, very popular in that, or maybe some chopping of cold cuts would be involved. But it's very difficult to entertain people that way. So we built our whole thing on having one hot demo and one cold demo. We had the mega bake, the massive 8 foot tall, 12 foot long, 10 foot long, don't remember.
Actually, 15.
15? Easy bake oven.
Yeah,
with the belts, with the stretchers. And so When you're like, okay, well, we're going to do it all over again, we at least this time knew, well, we know what works. We know what format works, right? And we didn't want to rebuild the chassis. We just wanted to strip it down and rebuild a new body, a new engine, a new everything else. So it came down to, well, what are we going to do for another hot demo, another cold demo? Because here's the problem. We knocked it out of the park. We got a Grammy with our debut album.
I mean, really can't beat pizza and ice cream. I'm sorry.
It's actually impossible to beat.
And that's the truth. Macaroni and cheese and
no pizza and ice cream.
Pizza and ice cream.
Much is
no, it's you look at it and you're like, oh my gosh, I don't know how to beat this. I how do you beat, you know, an oven that generates 1,026,000 lumens of light? I mean, it looks like we're igniting a star on stage. And when the Jet Cream goes off, it's like playing some kind of bizarre pipe organ from the North Pole. I mean. And then you're like, okay, well, this time we'll I don't even remember. There must have been a moment that we all looked at, which is like, well, I mean, do you remember?
Yeah. Okay, oh, there was a lot of head scratching. So
what are we gonna do this time?
But I think the important part of that was, okay, let's take all limitations off and let's just brainstorm and just ideas that we know could never work. And start from there.
You mean, dial
it back. It's the easiest way to do it.
Cat launcher.
Well,
at one point the man was talking about a ramjet. And so there was a moment.
Yeah. And we don't – we can all look over here to my left.
Oh, wait. Let's not look over. No, let's not look over.
There's an
in the
there's
dark an corners
object.
Of our
we're
studio.
We're going to office space that laser.
So we're all looking over – I mean, Sarah, you've seen this item over here on the left. So
I've never seen it in action.
Well, few people have. I had this idea that I was going to, you know, we were going to make a laser popcorn popper because everybody had seen the movie Real Genius.
Yes.
It's horrible, you know, but it's also, you can't turn away. And there's that great scene where they make the gigantic Jiffy Pop and they fire it with a laser. And so I wanted a popcorn with a laser. Well, it turns out you can. It is an amazingly unimpressive process.
And it is very, very, very minute. Precise.
So you spend a lot of money to pop like three kernels of popcorn. It happens right there in front of you, and you're like, wow, lasers.
So you're trying to tell me that TV and movies lied to me? That
yes,
that didn't really happen?
That did not really happen. Converting the – I'm sorry.
Man, I'm crushed.
I know. I feel your crush because, you know, I paid for that thing over there. And so we had a couple of real misfires. We had also – Todd worked with somebody to try to build I don't even remember what you call the
a
Herf gun, which is a high energy radio frequency, which is basically weaponizing a microwave. So, and you can do it, and the internet's full of cool things, and it does do
and
cool
it can
things.
Do some really cool
it does
things.
Some amazingly really cool does. Things.
Just not pop popcorn really well. We found that popcorn's actually extremely hard to pop.
It shouldn't even be here. It's really difficult. And I had made this decision, and I think I can say this without ruining the show for people who haven't seen it. The whole second act is basically about popcorn, which I'm obsessed with. But, you know, it was a lot harder to come up with workable demos for this show. And so what I tried to do is make up a bunch of little ones. And that was not good. That was stupid. That was bad thinking on my part. So, you know, there had to be some intervention.
Like it is in every creative process. Well, there has to be step away from the edge.
Yeah.
Well, no, you can't have a ramjet. And lasers.
No, you can't have it. Even if I had a ramjet, it probably wouldn't work. You know, I think that in the end, we learned a great deal about popcorn. But the creative of the show, everything has to come from these two demos. And what's funny is that we're not going to give it away, but it turns out that one of the most effective things to pop popcorn with that we do use in the show is a piece of motion picture equipment yes. that is incredibly robust and looks really, really great. And I don't even remember, we had like talked about it and then decided not to do it.
We said, okay, we have to have a plan B, C, D, whatever it has to be. And so we just started once again throwing out ideas. And that one, when we threw it out, we kind of looked at each other like, oh yeah, that's an easy one. Why didn't we?
We can rent that down the street.
We can go down the street.
I didn't need to spend $20,000 on constructing
a CO2 laser. I've seen that almost done before.
So. Yeah. We're not going to say what it is. But in the end, you've got all these precious snowflake ideas. And at some point, you've got to say, guess what? No, that's either not going to look good from the house. It's like, yes. We got the laser to work. We spent hundreds of hours. And at the end, it's like, you know what? From the second row, that looks like crap. It doesn't look like anything. And so you've got to admit, you know, it's the hardest thing when you're TV people because yes. you look at something that's small and it works and it's cool. You're like, fine, I now see that 40 feet tall because I'm going to do a tight shot exactly. with an inner cut and I'm going to blah, blah, blah.
I can jazz it up in post.
I can fix that stuff if sound designs get yep. no.
But in theater,
no. Mm-hmm. You've got to go big. So the creative process in the end of this show is that when we finally had working demos that we realized were robust and looked good. And by the way, this is a week before opening night. By mm-hmm. this point, we at least. Come on, guys. You remember March?
Oh, my gosh.
March was the worst.
We don't talk about the Ides of March.
March was the worst month of my life. And I've admitted to a few people, I've got big, big chunks of memory. I, there are things I can't remember.
Just block.
No, I mean, I can't remember. I think I got to a level of fatigue and stress that I just – parts of my brain. It's like, you know, we're just going to go offline right now. But in the end, we had some good new songs. We had science. We had the pop song, which ended up working very well with one of the demos. So we had good music. We had good tunes, and as usual, the quote comedy end quote had to kind of feel itself out. It wasn't so great opening night, but by the end, by a week into the run, maybe 10 days.
That's to me the one thing I enjoy about theater compared to film. Film, you really kind of know up front what's going to be funny. Theater, it, like I said, it lives. It breeds every night, so it changes. And it becomes – certain little bits become great that at the beginning you think, oh, maybe that wouldn't be. But by the time they source them out and life comes to them, they really take on their own.
And you've got to be willing to allow that to happen. Yeah. You've got to listen every night and make those adjustments because the truth is the first week on the road, you might as well consider yourself in previews. I mean we're not ripping those people off. I mean, they're getting a good show, but they're not getting the polish.
Well, I don't think people realize once we hit that first show, that's the first time everyone has been together, done it for the first time. We have crew coming from all over the country together, and they're all seeing it for the first time that week of our first show. So a lot changes within that first week because
– yeah, especially a show like this. It's not like – Hamilton that they were working on.
Oh, you had to bring up Hamilton. Thanks a lot.
We're on Broadway.
I've never
heard of
that.
We worked on it for that many years. And, you know, and then Hamilton. You have a ton of rehearsals and you have all that stuff like that. We yeah. don't. You
How many? We had four rehearsals. No, yeah. we didn't. We teched. We built the show and we actually ran through it.
We never did it once all the way through.
Well, perfectly. Not without something catching on fire.
Well, we'll get there. I want to get to that. People don't realize, you know, we load in a show in the morning. A lot happens in between. There's a show at night. We hop on the bus, and then we're in a different city the next day.
We load out the show.
Some of us load out the show.
Well, some of us hop on the bus and go ahead and start eating. Well, and the other of us just sit there and actually...
I have no idea what they're talking about. So let's talk about a day in the life of...
I can't technically do loading. It's not allowed.
Me either.
You can totally load. You can load in and out.
Let's talk about a day in the life of Eat Your Science. It starts very early. And it goes very late. So I think Todd should start because I feel like Todd might be the first one.
Well, Todd's not only the production manager, he's also basically the load master. I mean, if this was a military airlift operation, you would be the load master.
No, there's quite a few people that do that. So.
All right, well.
So I'm just one of the cogs in it. But
so
I would
the
say
bus rolls in.
Bus rolls in. Alton has to find coffee.
No, you.
Oh, no, but that's still.
You're up before, the coffee happens.
There's got to be coffee somewhere.
Yes.
We get up.
Todd doesn't drink coffee.
I don't drink coffee. It's amazing. Chuck shows up, hopefully, unless it hits a deer or a moose
or something crazy.
Well, we should definitely talk
about
that.
We're going to get to that, too.
These are things nobody thinks about.
I know.
So Chuck shows up. We all get off our buses. We usually find our way to some sort of meal in the morning.
Meals are typically served by the theater. There's catering.
Then we open the back of the truck. At that point, the locals come in and we direct them and we unload the whole truck. And when you talk about a whole truck, it's a 53-foot, I think, semi-truck, and it's packed literally like you would if you were moving cross-country.
It's like playing Tetris, right?
Yes.
I mean, there's
a lot of thought going into how every little box is going to be turned and flipped and laid in there to make it all fit. And so that usually takes about... On a good day, we can unload that truck, just getting it all on stage in probably about 35 to 40 minutes.
That's impressive.
But it comes out a lot faster than it goes in. And then once it's out, but then that starts the whole process, we've got to lay all the cable that we're going to use. We've got to hang all the lights we're going to use. We've got to test all the demos. We've got to pick up all the sound. All the band stuff has to get built. Once that's all done, and while we're doing this, we're all doing this in sequence with one another. So, of course, as soon as you want to try to do something, the lighting guys cut all the lights because they need to practice one little spot somewhere. Audio guy's got to run some incredible loud sound while he's checking decibel levels all throughout the theater. This whole time while I'm trying to put together something for one of the demos, and band's trying to rehearse. And that's how it goes. Probably the biggest thing about traveling touring is the fact that it's like Groundhog Day. You do the exact same thing every day. But unlike Groundhog Day, the whole scene changes every day. So every theater is different. You walk into one and it's this massive, beautiful, big theater and you've got plenty of room to put all your cases and it's real simple for, you know, brand to be setting up because they've got room. Then you go into other ones. I'm not going to mention certain states.
Oh, come on. Let's talk about Red Bank, New Jersey. Butte, Montana. Butte, Montana.
Beautiful.
Beautiful Butte, Montana.
Napa,
California.
Okay, so tell us.
So basically what happens is you get these theaters.
What happened in Napa? Beautiful little jewel box theater. That's what we call it.
Beautiful jewel box theater. And it's made for a person with a stool and a microphone.
Yeah, James Taylor solo.
I think Chuck E. Cheese's show is bigger than that stage. The stage with the animatronics at Chuck E. Cheese is bigger than the stage at Napa.
Well, and to get onto the stage, most places have a loading dock or a lot of times not a loading dock, but at least loading doors. This just had a regular door. You just come in the side door. Well, a lot of our stuff was too big to fit through that side door. So we had to.
All of our stuff.
What if we open the second French door? Will that work? No.
So
that's the one day I saw you really stressed.
Yeah. That's the days that you get stressed.
So we had to leave all of our cases in the street.
Yes. That's probably the biggest challenge to touring is that every place is different. And you know a little bit. They'll tell you
what's called advancing. We're supposed to advance the houses.
But there's always little things that these people don't tell you about in the advance. Do
you remember a surprise that was particularly loathsome?
Oh, showing up and they go, oh, well, we're not going to see the pit, but we have to leave it down. And so there's this massive net in front of it and like a 40-foot drop to your death if you step off the front of the stage. But we can't actually bring it up to make it safe. That was one of the ones that always kind of shocked me, but that was the way they did it.
All I know is it's really hard to play a house where the front row is 20 feet in front of you. I really just want to do a dive into the net. I mean, you know, why not? It's if I'm not right there, if I can't get right up next to the front row talking or playing or whatever, it's a really hard night. It's hard to bridge that gap, you know, because we're not doing these giant musical numbers and we're
you're a one-man show. It
changes the dynamic and people expect, rightfully, a very personal dynamic.
Well, and you have a decent amount of improv in the show that I think, like, you know, when people go see some of the larger shows, that's all – everything's been scripted down
to. Of course.
Everywhere.
Sure.
Yours is a general guideline, as I like to say, of what you're going to do.
Yeah,
some nights that guideline goes 20, 30 minutes longer than the other nights that the guideline goes.
Well, I think we were better about that this last time. I mean, the Edible Inevitable Tour, that show would range anywhere from 2 hours to 7.5, you know.
See, that was the surprise. That was the surprise that we had for their theaters, is we would tell them, oh, it's a two-hour show, and then 6 hours later.
I don't think we've been that bad with Ear Science. We've learned a little bit about how. But when you've got a show that's very heavily dependent on volunteers, you know, there's a volunteer component in both acts, and depending on how that person decides to do what they do, can really determine the length of the show.
Oh, no. There's some that are just so absolutely magnificent that you've got to let them keep going.
And the crowd. I mean,
and the crowd gets
the crowd, yeah. If you get a good crowd and you get a bunch of – like, I mean, what, Fayetteville, North Carolina? Wasn't Fayetteville, North Carolina, where it was a smaller – house kind of deal and smaller crowd, but they were fans, and it makes the show feel so good.
It does.
When you look down in the front row and there's like at least three or four people with sock puppets on their hands, you know it's going to be a good show.
You know some stuff's going to happen.
Speaking of volunteers, they are never plants. They are not plants.
What people don't understand is you could not – if you truly do it, it'll look rehearsed. No matter how much you try, it'll look rehearsed if you were to truly put a plan in there.
I agree.
People, what they say just off the top of their heads, and when they don't – once they get relaxed and they don't realize what they're saying, you can't script that. You really can't. It's so much more enjoyable not to.
We get countless emails from your contact page saying, how can we become a volunteer? And it's on the contact page. We will not pick you because it's your birthday, because it's your anniversary. It's not going to happen. It is truly chosen at random.
I can't imagine. I think Todd's right. I cannot imagine finding a way to script that and rehearse that and yet still have it feel as fresh as it is. I agree with you. I don't think it's possible.
And some of the thing comes from, because we are a traveling show, you're in different areas. And what's funny in Clearwater, Florida may not be in Minneapolis. And sometimes it's the way the local vibe they bring to it that actually makes it funny. And if you were trying to script that every night, it would sound very generic and very ha ha ha, laugh point now.
The only thing that's a constant is that when it comes to female volunteers, you want liquored up grandmoms. With a little bit of wine or a couple of gin and tonics. And I love playing houses that have a bar because they're
And you can also tell a Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday night crowd.
I'm always surprised by how unshy and uninhibited people are when they get up on stage, even if they haven't been drinking. I think I know that when we first started this, I was always concerned about, you know, getting volunteers that just clam up and they look out at the crowd and they see all this. Everybody gets into it. But of course, they wouldn't raise their hand and jump up and down to come up there if they were introverts.
But that's even funnier when they do. When they were super excited, then all of a sudden they show up and they're like,
why did I? And we've had that. And it's usually guys.
Always guys. I agree.
Females of the species don't tend to have that issue as much.
Well, because they dig you, remember.
They dig me. Chicks dig me. Yeah. No question about that, because girls like guys who can cook. But they very rarely flirt unless they're grandmothers. Let's move on.
Okay. Things go wrong sometimes. It's happened.
Never.
There's one instance, actually, Todd, that I remember sitting in the audience. Something caught fire. We're not going to say what. And this was during a run-through, so no one has physically seen this. I have never... I mean, things were on fire and everyone was freaking out. I looked straight at you and you were the calmest person. No, we are a large crew. And I looked at you and I go, he knows what he's doing. He knows exactly how to fix it. And it was just one of those moments where I was just like, all right, he's in control.
Tell my kids that if you panic, that's death.
But it's just easier to
panic. Get through the situation. Then afterwards you can go, oh, my God, that was really scary.
The fire was just a fire, though. Yeah. I mean, Todd, yes, fires and theaters don't get along. But Todd knew what needed to be done. Yeah. He needed to pick up the fire extinguisher. He needed to go up a very tall ladder and put a fire out on something that we're not going to talk about. And I'm actually really grateful that it happened, because if it didn't happen during that final run-through, it would have happened during a live show. And we're really lucky. You're right. If you panic, you're doomed. But that's not the worst thing that's gone wrong.
What's the worst thing, then?
Well, I don't know. Ask him.
I don't know. I mean, the worst thing's going wrong. I mean, a lot of times it's logistical things. Like I said, it's like when the truck hits a deer. And so now load in that's supposed to happen at 10 isn't going to happen until like 3. And they still have a show because they're never going to cancel a show. No matter if it's 10 feet of snow outside, you're not going to cancel the show. So then it becomes this, okay, what can we do? How do we get this in? How can we cut any corners possible? And that's what you do.
I can't remember a disaster happening on stage during a show that wasn't – that couldn't be fixed.
Yeah. I do remember one or two times where you
– I remember a couple times you forgot to bring things.
But all of a sudden my cue and I'm somewhere and I'm
Todd's
like, that's my cue.
I got to go get some stuff and take it on stage.
Exactly.
Yeah. Angry Birds goes in the pocket and he brings it out. But, you know, that –
that's more of that moment of thinking you can get away with starting it because, once again, it's once you load everything in, it's all about getting ready to load everything out. So as things start coming off stage being used, you want to put them away and sure. try to get things. Fit. And there's a couple times where you get a little too like excited about that and realize, oh, hold on, that hasn't actually played yet. Uh-oh, it plays now.
I'm going to put this on the truck. Oh, he's calling for it. Yeah, that happens. Yeah. But it's not like you're in the middle of, again, like a big musical number where everybody's taken out of the moment of the flow of the drama yeah. or a song,
exactly.
You know, that, you know, we've had
monitors go out, monitors going out is
during a song
worse because, and then especially with the pop song, I had that happen to me in Columbia, South Carolina, in the middle of the pop song. Before the pop song even started, I didn't have a feed. I didn't have anything. And so what happens is then I had to pull out my monitor Earbeat and listen to the house, and the house is a echo of, so there's a delay. So now I'm
so Jim was finally on time.
No, I'm usually
sorry. I had to.
It's a good joke, but it could really screw everything up for everybody.
Technical issues are probably the scariest because I know I can also, now you think about it, there was one time where we lost a projector. And we were so close to going that we didn't have time to put up our spare projector. And it was kind of this, our great video guy was like, I think I can get it. And it was literally, I can remember standing an inch from stage waiting for him to give me the signal. Because if he didn't, I was going to walk right across stage, whisper in Mr. Brown's ear and say, no projector, keep going and walk off. And I literally had a foot on stage when he gave me the thumbs up and the projector popped up. And literally it was, I mean, you could not have been a second more.
Was that Detroit? Was it like a rolling blackout or something?
But what it was is there was some power blackout and that threw all the machines off. But I can remember that. And that was the closest to.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We did have.
And I want to say it was coming back from an intermission.
No, it was one of the songs that I needed to think of. It was for pop song where no one would know what you guys were saying.
It was intermission. It was coming back from an intermission. And literally,
it was a power thing.
Yeah, it was a power thing.
It was.
The whole everything.
But Eric, our video guy, is a pretty cool cut. The only time that I ever remember him kind of freaking out was that night that Tinder went down. Do you remember that?
Tinder? Yeah. Tinder went down. Yeah.
And because every city they were in, you know, he's got a swipe right or swipe left. No? What do you mean?
No.
Yeah, he's got a girl?
He's got a very serious girlfriend. So.
And is he sorting them now by time zone?
He's committed. He's committed.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, really.
Yeah, we'll see.
All right, so let's stay on the music for a second because, Jim, you went from coordinator on Good Eats to you're going to be playing the drums on Broadway now. I mean, did you ever imagine yourself in this position?
No. I mean, you know, it's the funny thing. It's like when we were going to do the tour, the Edible and Edible tour, Mr. Brown came up to me and said, oh, yeah, you play drums, right? And I'm like, hold on a second.
You're a drummer, right?
I had a drum set, but I never actually played drums in a band.
But you've gotten better. I've gotten better.
A little bit.
Oh, I think you both have.
Every song that I learn, I buy a new guitar.
My thing is you can't play 100 and whatever it was, 120 shows and not
be good,
get better, and get timing down.
It's funny. So much, I think, of performing music on stage is simply no longer being afraid of playing music on stage.
100% agree.
You can actually get by with a modicum of musical skill, and the rest of it is rhythm and enthusiasm. You know, just ask the Sex Pistols. You know, I know more chords than those guys did.
So you pulled it off. Whether there were mistakes, there were stresses, or anything, the show is over. Like Todd said, some of us go and eat on the bus. Myself.
Well, you're hungry.
You're hungry. And Todd goes and
you don't just eat.
I feed.
You feed.
Todd loads out
Hey, Sarah.
The rest of the crew loads out. The rest of the crew loads out.
Todd and crew.
Everybody who's not me and you, basically.
Jim's with us.
Jim loads out. He's packing drums. He's packing drums.
And, you know, that's the time of the day where we kind of all finally settle down. And things can sometimes get a little insane. There are some stories that we'll keep to ourselves. Jim happens to, I think, give the bus a lighthearted addition. Jim can do, besides the cowbell.
Oh, great Christopher Walken.
A great Christopher Walken.
Well, the cowbell solo comes from the Saturday Night Live skit.
Yeah. You got a fever. You know. It's the Brown.
So we know he can do this, but as Todd mentioned before, sadly, our truck driver did hit a deer this last round. And what was a sad and very stressful situation at the time turned into a comedy routine from the accident report.
Oh, greatest accident report ever.
Ever.
In the history of accident reports.
Do you think, Jim, you might give our...
Oh, Jim, do it. Do it. Do it in Christopher Walken.
Give me a second here. I have to find the report.
Well, the accident report is actually... This deer incident was so bad. How long did it tear? It took the truck out of both the radiator. Well,
first of all, the truck usually arrives around 8 or 8:30 in the morning.
Yeah, or earlier. He'll race.
And it didn't get there that day until after 1 o'clock.
Yeah, it was almost 2:30 because they had to get another truck,
another tractor.
Yeah.
They had to get a new tractor
to come and pick it up.
Usually, the semi wins in a deer accident. But I think the deer it didn't win because obviously it died. But it did really set the show back.
We don't know that.
I mean, maybe when our bus hit it after, the second bus hit it after. Then ours are pretty good.
We're not laughing.
There's nothing better than getting up for breakfast and you walk out and you notice your bus driver pulling something out front bumper and you're like, "What's that?" And he's like, "Oh, the deer that came out from underneath the truck."
So now became the fur bus because there's fur all over it with hair and with the blood in the.
I just remember blood being splattered all up on the back end of our bus. That's how bad it was.
And then I remember going, "Okay, I guess I'll go get breakfast now."
Yeah.
And I just went out of the bus with my eyes closed and I had you guide me because I didn't want to see anything.
Did you find the accident report, Jim?
I did find it here.
Okay.
All right.
Jim is going to do it.
You got to understand, this accident report was written by our truck driver who is a man of few words, but
he's a great guy.
Really great guy.
He's hilarious.
What's his nickname? Scarecrow?
Yeah.
He's like, call me Scarecrow.
Tall.
Okay, Ron.
He's so tall. You
know,
okay,
Ron. Ron has a great sense of humor.
He's a great guy. Yeah.
Okay,
great.
So now we're going to have a dramatic reading of the accident report.
I got to do this cold, too.
From Jim Pace. It's all yours, Jim.
All right, here we go. This is the driver's description of accident done as Christopher Walken. I was driving in right lane, looked in mirrors for traffic check, looked back, deer in right lane. I went to the left. He went to the left lane. I went back right. We went kaboom. He went over there, over here, up there. I went straight.
Bravo. Honest to God, Bravo. That is what there, you wrote. And there's pictures with
this.
No,
there is not a single period in this report. And so
it's like an incoming poem. No punctuation.
I will never forget the first time Todd... I was sitting at the dining room table on the bus and Todd had read off this report and I don't think I had laughed so hard the entire tour.
Because it was the deer went
This is the best line right here is he went over there, over here, up there, I went straight. It's like, wait, hold on a second. So he was dancing. It's like, he went over here, over there, up here, I went straight. And that was the best part. I went straight. Guys, I'm just going to keep going. Because
and then both the buses ran
straight
over
too.
Door. We went straight as well.
This really isn't a laughing matter.
It is not.
Because
but
an animal died.
If you've ever been on a tour bus, you drive at night.
Yes.
Exactly. You drive at night, and there's nothing scarier than sitting up with the driver, like especially when you're going from like Minneapolis to somewhere like Chicago or something like that, and you're going through a lot of rural areas, and you just see the eyes on the side of the road. Oh. And all you can think of is when the bus driver turns and goes, deer are cool. It's the moose we have to worry about. Good night. I'm off to my bunk.
Well, I'll never forget.
I'm going to the back of the bus now.
I'll never forget because I was a latecomer. My first tour, Todd goes, I'll never forget this. Because we are not traveling in jets. We're not staying in
four-star
hotels. We literally board a bus. We stay in bunk beds. And Todd goes to me, you're going to want to be on the driver's side because if something happens, he's obviously going to save himself. And he said, then he looks me straight dead in the face and goes, if you feel vibrations for more than 10 seconds, duck and cover. And I'm just sitting there thinking, oh, my God, I'm going to die.
I think my exact things was, you know, the rumble strips on the side of a road. If you start hearing the rumble strip, it's like thunder. You start counting. If you get to 10, the driver's asleep.
Yep.
Tuck and roll because you're going.
But it's a real issue.
So now you just have a driver that wants to mess with you, and he'll go over to the rumble strip a little bit just to make sure everyone's awake.
And then come back and they go, I would so mess with people. But every night, at least once, I will wake up. And I'm all the way in the back of the bus. I don't have a bunk. I have an actual room.
Which you deserve.
Which, of course. Of course. I deserve that and the widescreen TV that's in it. But not the jacuzzi. But there's not a night that I don't wake up and wonder, am I the only person awake on this bus? And the more rumble strips you hear, you're sure the next thing I hear – yeah, brace for impact.
Yeah, you're putting your lives in these drivers.
You guys are much safer in the bunks because you're in the middle of the bus.
Yep.
And you're in basic tubes, whereas I'm just going to flop around back there. And
I really believe the curtain that separates my bunk from the outside would really help protect me.
Before you fall? Wouldn't it be great? I'm going to hear you.
Because it snaps in. Sealed in there.
There was one night, it was so bad, the first week, Lamar, who's your cinematographer, almost fell out of the bed one night. It was so bad. I also don't know how much he drank, but I remember waking up.
Well, I know how much. A freaking lot.
I remember waking up. He's like, I almost fell out last night.
Well, but it's 100% truth is that, you know, when you're up top too, and I feel Todd likes up top. I can only sleep on the bottom.
Yeah. Jim and I are on the bottom.
I can only sleep on the bottom because the first leg, you feel the wind, the sway of
the sway.
It's like a hammock.
The sways are really scary.
It's something to get used to.
I mean,
Once again, when it goes over, now I will be on the bottom. You guys will be up top falling. It just makes sense.
Of course, how often do buses flip all the way over? I think they just fall over sideways.
Go sideways is what I'm saying.
Yeah, but you have the window, so you'll fly out the window. So you're good.
As if it goes that way.
That's how I get out.
Yeah, but you can't get out if the window's on the ground.
These are the things that you think about. This is the stuff that you think about.
But you don't. When you're on the road, you can't think about it.
Well, it's because we have one driver that we have to have, John. I can only ride with John because we know John's not going to go to sleep. Or if he does, he drives very well when he's asleep.
Yeah. Cruise control.
Absolutely.
Cruise control. Yeah. Turn on cruise control.
Yeah.
It's just like autopilot.
It's the greatest thing. Put it in cruise control.
Do you have any other questions?
The one question I get almost every show during the Q&A session is for Todd. And it's what was your favorite prop from Good Eats? But no one has ever asked, and I'm curious, what is your favorite prop/demo from Edible Inevitable? Because there was so much there, and we can give that away now.
Yeah. I mean, the jet cream.
The jet cream.
I mean,
the Mega Bake.
I love the Mega Bake, and the Mega Bake was fun. I don't know. The jet cream, it was the one that gave me the most. Like, the Mega Bake was pretty, once it was dialed in, it pretty much did its job. There was a couple times, and it still is a little bit. It can be finicky when you're doing the jet cream.
It could pop.
It could blow up. Not blow up. I shouldn't say that. But there was a great time that right on cue, one of the seals broke, and it shot ice cream over the first front row. And I knew exactly what he was going to say when he walked off to the intermission. He looked at me and he goes, can you do that every night? And I was like, no. He's like, if you can repeat that every night, it's part of the show. But if you can't, we'll have to make it not do that. And I was like, yes, we'll make it not do that.
I remember that when it first popped and you were standing on the side and it was like, what was that?
So for 10 seconds, I would stand there every night and just be like, come on, keep counting, count faster. Okay, good, we're through it. And it works.
And every night I pull the handle on that CO2 fire extinguisher and close my eyes and count.
And I will tell you, as watching it as a fan kind of thing, you know, you really see it through the thing. One of the other favorite parts is the very end. If you ask me my favorite song, it's Lullaby. I always like the ending of it because talk about what we were talking about earlier about standing on the wings. And you look out in the crowd and that's the one song you just see faces and you see raw human emotion. People just like genuinely happy.
Yeah, we're getting.
And it really is a great way. It was a perfect way to end a show and stuff like that. And that's probably my favorite. It also meant that it was time to load out the show. So.
It's Pavlovian, you know. If he hears the opening chords of
any
Lullaby,
left on that stage, you just get packed up because we gotta go.
It's going.
Yeah, it's that little. It's the good night, everybody. Thank you for coming. And this is I'm going to tuck you into bed. And this is your send off. You know,
and it was way past everyone's bedtime by the time it came out.
Because
half of the audience was already actually asleep by the time.
Oh, yeah.
Well, your audience is. You know, we talk about this. You have a demographic where you have 4-year-olds in the audience and you have 70-year-olds in the audience. And to construct a show that satisfies young and old is not easy, but you do it.
By not
trying.
Well, burping and farting makes everyone laugh.
Well, no, but burping and farting makes everybody seven and under laugh, for sure.
I mean, I laugh.
I mean, I'm basically seven and under, you know, it's,
yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Besides, it's not the fart that's funny. It's who you look at right afterwards.
that's the comedy. Yeah.
Well, I'm glad to be doing it. I'm terrified of doing it on Broadway, but not getting in a bus every night. This would be the first time we've sat the show down even for a week. I mean, we've
never done two nights in the same place.
Never.
Never.
We are in the spring. We're playing two at the Pantages.
Very excited about that when I saw that.
Yeah, I don't think that's the only one, though, I think.
The only one.
Only yeah, two-nighter.
Like 2 days later, we do the same thing in Seattle, but we do it with the...
What are you laughing at?
The Pantages, talk about ultimate, all-time, like, uh-ohs, was the first show, which I think was our 100th show or something like that, at the Pantages.
It was, yeah.
In the Easy Bake. There's a little Easy Bake oven that's supposed to come down.
Oh, and it's thrown down.
It didn't come down. I'm looking at, I'm playing
you
the cowbell.
You had one job.
I'm like, I don't know
that
what
guy
to
had
do.
One
like,
job.
Like,
so
what do you
it.
Do at that point? Do you keep playing? Do you stop? What do you do? And that was
keep
the
playing.
One.
Keep moving is what I said. Yes, we have in theater, it's called a fly. It's basically it's pipes in the ceiling that raise and lower different things. We have one thing that raises and lowers during that whole show, and that was at Easy Bake. The guy had one job, and sometimes when you only have one job, it makes it a lot harder to do that one job because you get very bored. Well, apparently he got very bored and wasn't there when the one job was needed.
I remember. How long did it take for that thing to actually come down?
You called for it. You had to turn and start calling, and then you had to call me on.
But 3 or 4 minutes?
I don't think it was 3 or 4 minutes. It felt like
30
minutes. It was probably like 30, 40 seconds.
Yeah, well, that's the exact
right. It just felt like forever.
It felt like an hour.
Again, if you were in the audience, the way we played it off and the way no one would know. You thought it was part of the show that you called me out, that we had to argue with the fly guy, and then all of a sudden it came down.
I remember when the mics didn't work and you went out into the audience and apologized to everybody. I mean,
what
things happen. You went literally around to everyone in the audience. Like, you said hi to everybody to try and wait till we reset all the boards. That was...
Oh, we had a complete outage. That was Edible Inevitable Tour.
Was that my first leg? Or something? Was that Rockford?
When did it happen in the show?
No, right in the beginning. We were so delayed.
The soundboard went down.
You hate starting late.
I went out and talked to
you went
crowd.
Out in the audience and talked to them.
I think that was
crowd.
Rockford, Illinois.
Could have been.
One of those where...
Yeah. How do you remember that?
I just remember...
Because
how does he remember that?
Those things, those kind of shows, it's like when...
Because they don't happen often.
The Easy Bake doesn't come down, you know? Or, you know, you remember these things because it's anonymous. It never happened.
I did kind of sort of black out from too much... Of a certain compressed gas.
Yes.
I don't remember what city that was, but I didn't know that things had gotten bad until I kind of woke up.
Yeah.
And couldn't remember what had happened the last few seconds. But I didn't go down, though. I didn't fall down.
You were hanging onto the tank, and I was there ready because I could tell by like the
it was,
second or third
I just
time,
kind of – it was like going was backwards going down a dark tunnel. It was like, bye-bye, everybody.
And I can tell
when
you came
suffocating.
Back. I can tell when you came back, and all of a sudden you were back on.
Ooh.
There. And let's start again.
If that ever happens again, at least have the show be all the way over. You know, let me be on the bus.
I don't know.
We're out of time. Thanks, guys. Get back to work. Eat Your Science will be on Broadway the week of Thanksgiving at the Barrymore Theater, and will head back out on the road in spring of 2017. For cities, tickets, and more info, go to altonbrownlive.com.